南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。Hi friends, glad you're all here. Hope you're in good health, safe. Today I want to take a little bit deeper dive into the nine consciousnesses. And here's why. It occurred to me as we're studying the perfection of wisdom that there are still lingering questions about why we chant Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. We've talked about this ad nauseum through Nichiren's eyes, what each of the characters, I wrote a book of all the instances of Nichiren's letters that deal with the specific characters and what they symbolize. It's not a direct character to English word association. It's nothing like that. Our gangyo is nothing like that. Our chanting is nothing like that. You have to change your perspective, your mind around what you're doing. You're instantiating, you're calling out, you're invoking a branch, a conceptual portion of the teachings of the Dharma. Myo stands for many, many aspects of the depth of the process of life, of the process of the universe, of the process of every phenomena. Gas, water, liquid, solid, human, non-human, on and on. Ho is about the uncountable variations of those instantiations. Right, so these cease to be words and they seem to be more spheres of thought, understanding, analysis, right? And the nine consciousnesses are one of those steps. If you were to equate them to Myoho Renge Kyo, which I've never done but might be an interesting thing to do, I think you would say that within the whole portion of Myoho Renge Kyo is the samsaric instantiation from Myo, the quiescent energy, the potential, comes the instantiation Renge of the karmic force to be, and Ge, the manifestation to be, and then Kyo, the teaching of the whole thing, seeing the whole thing together. The nine consciousnesses would be the center of that, the Ho Renge, and then when we discuss it with wisdom and practice it and invoke our understanding of the whole thing, the Kyo, right? So the nine consciousness, again, are the middle portion. Myo and Kyo bracketing the nine consciousnesses. For us in samsara, that is certainly an equatable thing. So we talked about the nine consciousnesses. I talked about them. And I used this, this image that you've all seen that I've posted before, right? But I wanted to try something new today because it occurred to me that still with all this information and diagrams and, oh, that's pretty, and I think I get that when we chant, we go through to our Alaya consciousness. But as I was speaking about perfection of wisdom, it occurred to me that there may be something about this that hasn't clicked for you. And that is partially due to poor scholarship on our parts, on everyone's part, on the authors of these translations, on these certainly these groups and cults of Nichiren and Buddhism and early Buddhism. There's this idea. You remember way back when we learned about the 10 worlds, right? In direct relation with the 9 consciousnesses, right? But the 10 worlds are more about states of mind that we're constantly sifting through as we look through this pile of lenses that are the 10 worlds and how they interrelate and intercombine, form our perception of samsara, of the world, for each and every one of us uniquely in 100 different combinations, 3,000 realms in a single moment. See, we keep circling around the same thing. And there's this idea, and I don't know where it first manifested, if it's just a flaw in the way we talk about it that I want to address today. But there's this idea that we exist. I'm in the world of learning because I'm watching a video. I'm in the world of realization because I just had an aha moment. That is a it's incorrect. I'll just say it. That's not a correct perception of the worlds, of the 10 worlds or the 3,000 realms. What's far more interesting and maybe a little more difficult to grasp is that all of the worlds are constantly before our mind's eye, and we're by gradations kind of moving through, around in combinations, and we may have a gravitational center in those worlds. But living life as a human being without Buddhism is the first 6 worlds. You're constantly migrating, combining, and moving through all of them at every single moment. That's the point of the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment, that they're all intermixed. Now, you may gravitate towards certain worlds at different times. What we might call mood, right? I'm feeling like this today. And so what's happening is you're gravitating within the 6, all of them, but you're weighting down certain worlds and you're sort of spinning around in there. All 6 are still there, but you're weighting yourself more in certain zones. And arguably, as a Buddhist, we know that you're actually in 3,000 or more. But your focus is down. When we practice Buddhism, we start to elevate our knowledge of the process, the largesse of all phenomena. We're not just self. We're self within this larger mechanism, this brew of life, from Andromeda to the microwave background to beyond that to this very moment, it's all you and I. That's harder to conceive of because we're used to being in those 6 worlds, right? Or more accurately, 6 within the 6, that would be 36 times 10 factors, 300. You see how this goes? You're never in one world. That's simply impossible. So first, if you divest yourself of that idea and start to seeing this roiling, you can see how it's difficult for a human being to say, I've made up my mind, because as I said that, my mind changed. Because that's the nature of mind. And that's what Buddhism is trying to elucidate for us to understand how, what a cacophony is going on in our heads for us to be very determinate and stand firm on any thought is really absurdity. But there's hope, because through Buddhism, through chanting Namu Myoho Renge-kyo, we can immediately invoke the most stable thing that is within all phenomena. The point of pre-origination, the origination of the phenomena to begin with, which is true of all phenomena, which is also true of us. Albeit we are in a situation, samsara, where we can perceive it. We can experience it consciously. The whole of the universe experiences it, but doesn't experience it as an experience. Right? We all experience gravity, as the planets, stars, moons, so on, all experience gravity. But you and I feel it. We know it. Because when we fall down, we know all about gravity. We're conscious of it. That's the beauty of this instantiation as a thinking mind within the bounds of samsara, as a human. This is our unique opportunity. Without it, we would just simply plummet through everything without description, without identifying, without name and form. We would be name and form, but we wouldn't perceive name and form. A dog doesn't, when it runs into something, doesn't think, oh, door, oh, wall, oh, stump, oh, human leg. It just knows my nose hurts. Don't do that again. And it will do it again. Right? It doesn't dissect its process. It simply moves through it. Is this getting too convoluted? So, back to the nine consciousnesses. When we chant Namu Myoho Renge-kyo, we are invoking our ninth consciousness, our Buddha. And you remember the drawing I just showed you, the circle with sight on the outside, hearing. Those consciousnesses are what we call in normal everyday parlance, our senses. But a sense of things is a consciousness, right? To sense something. See, sensing has a whole slew of activity going on underneath it. If you think of just the word sense, right? To sense something automatically includes the identification of it, the name of it, the feel of it, the smell of it, the taste of it, the sight of it. It's a sensing, right? So in Buddhism, we break it down. There's a sight sense, a hearing sense, a smell, a taste, a touch, a mind, a predisposition. I've run into this door before. Is it a hollow core, a solid core, a steel door, a wood door? Right? So Buddhism dissects our human experience via the mind. Nine consciousnesses. Now, again, I want to disavow you of the idea that we're in any one place at any one time, right? So, I'll put some drawings up on the screen that, they're not very good drawings though, so I'm not proud of them. But, so I put this up real quick, and I'm saying, try to envision the nine consciousnesses as a triangle for a different take on this, all right? And this triangle is moving through samsara, the sea of samsara. That's why the little waves here, right? Now, actually, more three-dimensionally, we could see this as a wedge, right? Boy, I'm not doing that good. No. Anyway, like a cheese wedge, right? That it's pushing, going through the waves here, pushing through life, through samsara. And we experience, just go along with me here, we experience this samsara through our senses, right, from here to here, we experience through sight, smell, hearing, touch, so on and so forth, right? And then we have our thinking, that's our sixth sense, and then we have the predispositions in our thinking, our epistemology, and then down here in the eighth, we have our karma. Everything that's led, every piece of energy, every piece of thinking, every piece of manifestation leading to DNA, all of it that got us here. It's all still, we're carrying that along with us through the karma. And down here, quietly abiding, is our Buddha nature, our ninth consciousness. And so it's not driving the boat. And when we chant, like the circle shows, we pierce each one of these to enliven that ninth consciousness, right? We chant and drive right through all of these to get to this clear mind consciousness. Now, this is the trick that I want to make sure you understand. What we're actually doing is taking this ninth consciousness and we are moving it here. You see that sliver? That's what used to be down here, right? That used to be here, the ninth consciousness. When we chant, we take this ninth consciousness and we make it lead. Does that make sense? We do not, and here's this secondary point, we don't get rid of these. So for those who have it in their heads from whatever source that Buddhahood is something outside of samsara, something outside of this lifetime, you've missed the boat. What we're doing, as Shakyamuni taught, is experiencing Buddha in the here and now, in samsara. So Buddha, now driving this ship, still drags along samsara, or the consciousness is within samsara, which is everything, albeit with the sight, the understanding of the Buddha mind. So you have the Buddha of sight, the Buddha of hearing, the Buddha of smell, the Buddha of taste, touch, thought, epistemology, karma. Karma through Buddha becomes very clear. You can even further develop this drawing to say that what happens when you chant and you instantiate this ninth consciousness up here, that it actually, representationally, would look more like this. Actually, go all the way around. And put our ninth consciousness up there. What happens is Buddha wraps around and creates a completely new triangle of motion through samsara and contains the other eight consciousnesses. Is that a better illustration? The whole reason I wanted to talk about this is this this persistent idea that we only exist in certain facets of our being. That's not right. That's not correct. All of it is ongoing. The only thing that changes is our focus, our mind's conditioning, right? Tendencies and conditions. Those eight consciousnesses are our samsaric tendencies and conditions. And they're different for each and every one of us. And it doesn't take much difference when you consider the multitudes of incalculable numbers of energetic reactions and combinations that are coming together to make this moment, this moment, this moment, this moment. Even within your own idea of self, you know that 5 years ago you were someone else. I don't mean you had a different driver's license and a different name. I mean consciously, mentally, in your mind, your worldview, your consciousness of the world and your place within it was a very different combinatory person. Because that's the person Buddhism talks about. Not these hands, hair, or lack of, eye color. All of those things are just decoration around the you that is. Because the you that is isn't this. It isn't where you live, how much money you make, what car you drive, who your relationships with, the clothes you wear, your eye color, the condition of your teeth. That has nothing to do with you other than a carriage for your experience. Your experience is you. And if your experience is based on your teeth, you're in sad shape. I'm not saying don't care about your teeth. I'm saying your teeth are not you. You are an experience. Excuse me. Get settled here. And that experience is what we're trying to enlighten, to make aware, to awaken to the potential of that experience with the teeth, the eye hair, the color, the sight, sound, the, all of that. Because all of that is just dissamsaric reality. It's not the reality of what and who you actually are. You are the same as all processes of the knowable universe, or even unknowable, because some parts of the universe, some might say infinite, are traveling faster than light can reach us from them. So you could say they're traveling faster than the speed of light. We will never see that as that universe. It's moving away too quickly. You obviously know that the furthest stars are hundreds of light years away from us. So by the time we see them, experience them through our samsaric minds, sight, they may be long gone, no longer there. Because we're seeing them through the time machine of space, time, space, time. Once you start to dig into that, you'll understand the idea of Buddhism, that Buddha is timeless. This is why it is everywhere. This perceptive capacity that we can experience is everywhere, in everything, because it is the instantiation of the process of life. And if you can see with those eyes, then these eight are fascinating, but not owned. They're just a product of you. There's the detachment. That when in this drawing, the ninth consciousness is shown as this little central circle, it takes me back to the analogy that I used to talk about, the Chinese concept of Wu Ji. Wu Ji, Tai Ji, Yin Yang. You remember that? I think that's also in this book that I've rewritten. I think it's early on. Yeah, it's right in the, yeah. From Wu Ji to you and me. I may even have that on my my website, where you could download. There's little drawings that go with it. I'm not seeing right now. I hope they made it into the new book. Shoot, maybe not. Okay. So maybe I should talk about Wu Ji for a moment, because as a mental exercise, I think anything that can help us visualize what we're doing when we're chanting, invoking Buddha, right? So when it comes to the forces of the universe and our bioelectrical existence, there's a concept. Do you remember my talking about a lifeline or lifetime as a series of points, and that a point isn't a thing, but just a reference to a location? Remember that? Well, you'll be able to see well enough. So the symbol for Wu Ji is a circle. Okay. But that circle isn't a, quote, circle. It's a point. In other words, a point, remember, is a location. It is the first dimension. Right? And something one-dimensional is something we cannot perceive. It's a location. Now, location can be anything you want it to be. And that's why Wu Ji is a circle. Because in location, it can be anywhere. And therefore, all potential. And potential doesn't have a limit. So it's nowhere and everywhere. Wu Ji. It's potential. Now, when there's a stirring in that potential, an agitation, a movement, a beginning of energy moving, and it produces kinetically Tai Chi, which is shown as a spiral, it still isn't a thing. It's not name and form, Namarupa, it's not there yet. It's the beginning of the Nidana in Buddhist terms. But in Chinese, ancient Chinese, Wu Ji, this is Tai Ji. This is the energy of formation. And when that energy of formation instantiates something, we get yin yang, duality, soft hard, self other, every phenomena. right? Every phenomena, yin yang, comes from tai chi energy stirring the pot. Potential. Potential tai chi phenomena. It's in the second meditation of Gangyo. This area can be dissected as the bioelectrical force, chi, written QI, chi. And here we can regulate that chi to establish action. This martial arts, friends, that's qigong, to be more accurate, the hard work of working with our energy. And this is what we do when we chant. When we chant, we reach all the way into the potential, wu ji, right? Wu ji, or Buddha. Sorry. And we apply our bioelectric will, our samsaric instantiation, and we move it to take action via our enlightened state, our state of maximal potential, the observer. Now, I know I'm confusing different philosophies here, but what I want you to see is that we're not doing anything that isn't built in to what we are. We're not inventing anything. We're simply putting things in proper perspective. And what do we use to put things in perspective? Our minds. This is a science of mind. So when you think of consciousnesses, when you think of worlds, when you think of realms, 3,000 realms, 30,000 realms, when you think of what the heck am I actually doing, chanting Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, you're stirring the pot of creation. You are observing the process of all phenomena. How can that not be awe-striking? And the more awe-striking it is, the more you study it, the more you see through that mind. Doesn't all of our struggle, pain, anxiety, stress, doesn't it seem kind of tiny, petty? Why does that occupy so much of my mind when all of this is happening? That's so silly. That's so unimportant. I don't even want to think about it anymore. Watching these kind of TV shows keeps reinforcing my anxiety about this and that. You know what? I don't need to watch this. Maybe I should spend more time playing chess, reading a book, studying this magnificent process of letting all that crap go. All it does is make me suffer. What am I doing with my life? Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. This is what I'm doing with my life. This is the great release. Gosh, isn't it amazing? Gosh, my life is astounding. Your life is astounding. Your life is astounding. Life is astounding. all the stress, the anxiety just falls away because it's so trivial. Why do we let it control us so? We don't need to annihilate all of those things. They don't need to go away. They just need to be understood from a much more enlightened, aware perspective. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Make sense? How long did that take? I've got through that pretty fast. I hope this little exercise helped get your melon going so that you can make this work for yourself. I guess my main point is, on one side, duality. There is no annihilation in Buddhism. There is no immolation in Buddhism. There is no throwing away in Buddhism. In Buddhism, all of it is part of the great passion of the life process. Our only obstacle in this human life is not understanding that. You go for a hike. I don't know if you like the outdoors. I like the outdoors. Come up with your own analogy. You go for a hike through the woods, the beautiful trees, the sound of the flora and the fauna, and the bed of the forest bed that you're walking on, the great majestic rocks and cliffs, and it's all amazing. And then you hear something. And you go and you look over an edge of a mountain or a cliff, be careful, and you see this mad rushing white water bouncing over rocks and cleaving to the sides of a gorge or something. And you just watch and you feel the power of it. And you feel the tumult of the waves and the water as it rushes over these rocks and crashes and makes these beautiful little rainbows. And you go, wow, is that amazing? And then suddenly, you see yourselves in that white water, bouncing off the rocks, tumbling into the water, scarcely able to take a breath, panicked. Has anything changed? Have the rocks, mountains, trees, flora, fauna, has any of it moved, changed form? Has that rushing rapids jumped up in the air and swallowed you whole? Everything's the same. You just see it from a different point of view. Samsara is the rapids. Buddhaness, awakening, is the hillside that you look down upon samsara with. Nothing's changed. Nothing's gone away. It's just your involvement. Does that make sense? I hope that this is your goal in practice. I hope that this is what you experience. Looking down that cliff upon your life, liberated from the stresses and anxiety of it, and being in a position where you can now appreciate it and make much easier decisions. Why else would you want to be enlightened? To leave this world? No. To live this life its fullest. That was the goal Siddhartha set out for himself. before he became enlightened. To live this life easily, beautifully. To see all of those things like birth, sickness, old age, death, as simply things endemic to the process that could be managed with a wiser viewpoint, an unengaged, albeit a mastery of, how to minimize stress and anxiety and travel through samsara, glide through samsara, if you will, happily, appreciatively. Not the kind of appreciation that comes from atoning. Be happy. No, that's not happiness. That's religion. But to experience every moment of this samsaric reality as wonderful opportunity, right? Like playing chess, but look at the grandeur. Never forget what your little temporary existence, as magnificent as it can be, is just a part of a whole that's unfathomable, amazing beyond knowledge. You are that. And Buddhism is a methodology to remind, to call forth, to instantiate that mind of knowing, that mind of seeing, of participating, liberated from the stresses and anxiety of those eight. Okay? Namo Myoho-renge-kyo. Thank you for sticking with me. If I glossed over something, or maybe something caught your interest, you want to know more about it, let me know in the comments. Otherwise, I have no way of knowing. All right? Unless you can come in here and say, hey, Sifu, I saw that video. I wanted to talk to you about it. I would love it if that could happen. But obviously, our substitute for that is communication. So talk to me. Let me know what you're thinking. Take care of your health. Be kind. And I'll see you in the next one. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo.